Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
Happy Wednesday, middle of the week. It is July 10th, 2024. Always great to be with you. And we, as we always say here, we are family. Yes, are you old enough to remember that Sister Sledge song? There you go. It was Sister Sledge, right? Yes, it was. Anyhow, speaking of our family, a very prominent member of that family, in addition to you and me, Mike Aquilina. I love him. He's terrific. He's an author. He's a speaker. He's an expert on the Church Fathers. Brand new book from our friends at Ignatius Press. Listen to this title. This is so cool. I love alliteration. Rebels, Riots, and Ruins. So this book takes a look at several different cities over the centuries that were anything but Christian and how they were evangelized for Jesus. Yay. We'll take a look at that. And I'm sure Mike will have a lot to say about how this, you know, everything old is new again, or there's nothing new under the sun, as it says in Ecclesiastes. It really is important to look back at history. And this is why I love the saints so much. And his book does talk about the saints that were involved, obviously, in these efforts. Because we do have such a great cloud of witnesses. When you look at the lives of the saints and what many of them endured and how they stood up for the faith and how they changed, if not the entire world, at least a big part of their own worlds, it should be encouraging to us to never give up and to always keep our eyes on Jesus, as it says in Scripture, the author and finisher of our faith. So I'm very much looking forward to this interview with Mike Aquilina, which is coming up after the news and the weather. And then, Joni, we go to Rome, the Eternal City. Of course, it is a Wednesday, but the Holy Father, being that he's taking his staycation at the Vatican, will not have an audience today. They resume in August, but of course, never a dull moment. There's some interesting reports coming out of the Vatican regarding the Synod and some discussions that we thought were off the table after being thoroughly dissected. Now they're back on. Joan will have the latest. You can also see the reports on Catholic News Agency as well, following this very closely. So Mike Aquilina, Rabbles, Riots, and Ruins, and our very own Joan Lewis. Well, Houston, we have some problems. Houston still has power outages, of course, but they're going to be hopefully seeing the light by the end of the day. Now, we are having problems not just in Texas as a result of Beryl, but across the country, even way up here in Michigan. Our state is getting pummeled with really heavy rain as a result of the remnants of the storm. The National Weather Service does say that the remnants of Beryl moving through the Ohio Valley and the Northeast today will see heavy rainfall in those parts, which may bring flooding and a few severe thunderstorms. We also have flooding advisories in southeastern Michigan as well, damaging winds and some tornadoes. Now, there's also that dangerous heat wave that's continuing. Record temps expected to continue across much of the western part of the country, and extremely warm temperatures also for parts of North Carolina throughout southern New England. So if you look at the map, the weather map, you see the western part of the country, the northwest, California, Nevada, those other states, Utah, and you've got all these bright pink and orange colors. And then you go over to, for example, Michigan, you see a lot of green indicating the rain. And then the middle of the country, it's like pretty clear. But then in the northeast, you see more rain, and also parts of Pennsylvania and other parts of, for example, as we heard, North Carolina. And let's see, Virginia, Pennsylvania, New York State, all of them are feeling some extreme heat there as well. So the east and the west getting the heat, and of course, parts of the Midwest getting the rain, thanks to the Beryl remnants that are moving across the country. It is a Wednesday morning. We so appreciate your listenership. This program, as you hear at the top of the hour, is co-produced by Ave Maria Radio out of Ann Arbor, Michigan, and EWTN out of Irondale, Alabama. Mike Aquilina and Joan Lewis, two great guests today. Hope you can stay tuned for the entire program. A ton of news to get through, so let's get started. It's almost 5 minutes past the hour now on a Wednesday morning. An emerging Catholic charter school, as Catholic News Agency tells us, managed by the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City, is appealing now to the U.S. Supreme Court after the Oklahoma Supreme Court ruled it could not be funded using taxpayer dollars. St. Isidore of Seville Catholic Virtual School, which is a joint project between the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City and the Diocese of Tulsa, set to launch next month as an online tuition-free Catholic K-12 charter school based out of Oklahoma City. In the U.S. charter schools, they're free, publicly funded schools that have greater flexibility in their operations and management than traditional public schools. In a lawsuit, however, last year, the state attorney general asking the Oklahoma Supreme Court to declare the state's contract with the school unconstitutional. He claimed the grounds on it grounds that it constituted public funding of a religious institution. And last month, the court agreed, ordering the Oklahoma Statewide Virtual Charter School Board to rescind its contract with the virtual Catholic charter school. The Archdiocese, though, saying this week that the school will appeal that decision. Again, more information on our news website, CatholicNewsAgency.com. Rory O'Neill tells us, in this age of social media, a new report finds more and more people around the world are actually feeling lonelier.
More than one in five people, 23% worldwide, tell Gallup that they felt loneliness a lot of the day yesterday. Research has shown that when people feel lonely, it makes other issues like sadness, stress, and anger even worse. Loneliness is a big issue in many African nations, according to the Gallup survey, less so in Kosovo, Estonia, and Vietnam.
The White House is trying to turn the page on calls for President Biden to drop out of the presidential race. Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre noting Tuesday that top congressional Democrats are publicly supporting Biden's candidacy following his debate performance. This after both House and Senate Democrats met behind closed doors to discuss Biden's reelection campaign and several Democrats calling on Biden to step aside. While hosting a campaign rally in Florida yesterday, former President Donald Trump said he is officially offering Joe Biden the chance to redeem himself in front of the entire world after his poor debate performance last month.
It went along, and after a couple of minutes, I was saying, what's going on out here? It was a little bit strange. I think the whole event, it was amazing as an event, but it was a little bit strange. He didn't do too well.
Trump suggesting they hold another debate this week. However, Biden said no. He's in Washington, D.C. to attend the NATO summit with other world leaders, and that's going on until Friday. Mark Mayfield tells us Hunter Biden is now dropping his request for a new trial in his federal gun case.
The president's son was convicted of three counts related to lying about his drug addiction to obtain a firearm. His attorneys requested a new trial last month, arguing there was a procedural mistake that should have stopped the trial from moving forward. The legal team conceded on Tuesday, however. They misunderstood the situation and withdrew the request. Hunter is still pursuing several other challenges to his conviction.
Ceasefire talks between Israel and Hamas are set to resume today in Qatar, 9 months into the war that's claimed thousands of lives.
And we heard from Hamas saying that Israel's continued incursions in the Gaza Strip are making this deal and these renewed negotiations less and less likely because of the continuing fighting.
Reporter Matt Bradley says part of that renewed Israeli offensive this week left nearly 30 dead in an Israeli airstrike on a tent city set up for displaced Palestinians. Israeli forces are pushing deeper into parts of Gaza where residents say soldiers are searching door to door and shelling homes. Israel says it is reviewing reports of casualties. And crews are scrambling to restore power to nearly 1.5 million customers in Texas. This after Beryl slammed parts of the state. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick saying yesterday the Biden administration has made an emergency disaster declaration to help in the recovery.
We are appreciative that the federal government has stepped in and they will pick up most of the cost as we go through recovery here of the storm.
It is a race against time, however, as much of southeast Texas is under a heat advisory again today with a near triple-digit weather forecast. CenterPoint Energy says they expect power to be restored for nearly 1 million customers by the end of today. New record flooding caused by the storm's rainfall in the region and dangerous driving conditions as well, causing road delays and closures. The storm taking the lives of 8 people, 7 in Texas and 1 in Louisiana. Rick Hochul tells us weather experts, meanwhile, are bumping up their numbers for what's expected to be an extremely active Atlantic hurricane season.
Researchers at Colorado State University are now predicting 25 named storms, 12 hurricanes, and 6 major hurricanes of Category 3 or greater. Back in June, CSU called for 23 named storms, 11 hurricanes, and 5 major storms. There have already been 3 named storms, Alberto, Chris, and Beryl. They point to the very warm waters of the tropical Atlantic and the likely transition to a La Nina weather pattern as the reasons for the slightly higher numbers.
Massive wildfire that's been burning in South Jersey since last week is now 90% contained. The fire was first spotted in Wharton State Forest Friday morning after it had already consumed 450 acres. The heat and humidity has made it a lot difficult in terms of fighting the fire and has since torched more than 4,000 acres. Fortunately, the fire is not threatening any structures and no one has had to evacuate. Deanna Kodiak, meanwhile, tells us fire danger remains very high in California, with high temps expected to continue in the Golden State over the next few days.
Firefighters across the state are urging people to be responsible.
Be cautious out there. 95% of our fires statewide are caused by humans.
CAL FIRE Battalion Chief Jesse Torres says the recent heat wave has worsened the dry conditions, so even simple acts like mowing and weed eating could be risky. An East Bay man and a Sonoma County man were arrested over the weekend for accidentally starting a fire with a lawnmower. Torres says people should mow early in the morning and should not park cars in the grass. Be sure that trailer hitches are not dragging on the ground, which can spark, and avoid open flame activities like barbecuing and burn days.
The Republican-led House voting today on a law that would require voters to show proof of citizenship when registering to vote. Texas Republican Chip Roy leading that effort and says it's overwhelmingly popular among the American people.
We just want to make clear that that only citizens vote. There shouldn't be anything complicated here. My favorite is when Democrats complain about this and say, well, it's already illegal. Well, then what are you worried about?
He argued that non-citizens voting in federal elections could sway the outcome, citing close races in recent election cycles. Migrant families in Boston must now exit Logan International Airport. The Democratic governor there, Maura Healey, set Tuesday's deadline, saying the airport should not be an emergency homeless shelter, adding her state should no longer even be a migrant destination.
We've also made clear to those who might think about coming to Massachusetts that we're not going to be able to provide housing, nor are you going to be able to stay at Logan Airport anymore.
The state has been working to provide a new shelter space at a former prison, the governor last summer declaring a state of emergency over the immigrant crisis. One other self-declared sanctuary cities, including New York, as well as Denver and Chicago, also running out of space for immigrants. Phil Farrar tells us there's a legal battle that could turn into a major food fight, so to speak. Later this month in Washington, D.C., two grocery chains will ask the government if they can merge.
The Federal Trade Commission is expected to hold hearings to decide if grocery chains Albertsons and Kroger can merge. The chains releasing a plan to sell nearly 600 stores nationwide, 63 in Southern California.
The merger is not approved. It still has to go through the court system. It still has to be approved by the FTC, which it's not. The unions are going to do effects bargaining over this if the merger gets approved.
Todd Walters is president of the San Diego Grocers Union. Effects bargaining is done to prevent layoffs. Kroger says customers would benefit from lower prices and more choices through the merger.
The Fed says high inflation isn't the only risk the economy is facing. Fed Chair Jerome Powell telling Congress yesterday he wants to see more evidence that inflation is cooling before cutting interest rates, but added that waiting too long could hurt the economy and the labor market. He said new numbers are showing unemployment is going up again and it may prompt some rate cuts sooner. Also said the Fed will need to examine more economic information before making a rate cut decision. Andrew Whitman tells us about the former head of emergency medicine at a Brooklyn medical school and hospital and how he's now charged with embezzling more than $1.5 million, even in the years he earned about $500,000.
Dr. Michael Lucchese was arraigned Tuesday on 9 counts, including grand larceny and tax fraud. The Brooklyn DA's office says Lucchese used SUNY Downstate Medical Center's credit card as a personal ATM, taking $1.44 million over 6 years, paying for vacations, gym membership, college tuition for his kids, and $176,000 on goodies for the 5 dogs he shared with his girlfriend. Lucchese pleaded not guilty. His attorney says the case is more complicated than prosecutors say.
Almost 15 minutes past the hour, as we wrap up the news on a Wednesday morning, July 10th, 2024. The San Diego Zoo says the two giant pandas that arrived from China last month are settling in ahead of their first public appearance.
It's exciting, really. It's exciting. Like, so cool.
The adorable duo's journey from China began 2 weeks ago after months of preparation. The first of even more pandas bound for the U.S., including Washington, D.C., later this year.
Reporter Liz Kreutz says there's no timeline for the public to see the bears, but the zoo says they are comfortable as they adjust to their new surroundings with the help of U.S. and Chinese conservation partners. Thanks for tuning in to Catholic Connection, once again a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN. Find us both online, AveMariaRadio.net and EWTN.com. Mike Aquilina joins us, a really cool new book, Rabbles, Riots, and Ruins. We'll tell you all about it up next.
As the largest religious media network in the world, EWTN has an important role in educating others about our Catholic faith and spreading the good news of salvation. We invite you to explore our numerous pages of historical faith documents, prayers, teachings, and other current issues in Catholicism today. Visit EWTN.com and click Catholicism. EWTN is the global Catholic network.
Have you booked your spot for the Grand Getaway this year? It's held at the historic Grand Hotel on Mackinac Island from July 22nd to the 24th. Speakers include Scott and Kimberly Hahn, Father Josh Johnson, and Father John Ricardo. With daily mass, live taping of Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, and dancing to the Grand Hotel Orchestra, it's hardly a surprise that there's just a few spots remaining for this very special event. Book this Ave Maria Radio trip now. Check the travel page on AveMariaRadio.net.
The following program is brought to you in part by MyCatholicWill.com. Surveys show that more than half of Americans do not have a will. At MyCatholicWill.com, it takes as little as 15 minutes to write your will and secure a legacy of faith. MyCatholicWill.com is the exclusive online destination for creating a Catholic will. The process of writing a will is simple and now more accessible than ever. MyCatholicWill.com, a legacy of faith for those you love.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
Rabbles, Riots, and Ruins, 12 Ancient Cities and How They Were Evangelized. Joined by our friend Mike Aquilini. You know him well from his many programs and appearances on EWTN. His great work. Of course, expert in church history and the church fathers. So you were telling me, Mike, during the break that this title just kind of came to you, right, from the Holy Spirit?
Well, it did. You know, I think it was the Holy Spirit, but I was filling out the form for the publisher, and there's this line for the title there, and I was going to title it something boring like 12 Cities, and I was thinking about, you know, what are the things that took place in the course of the evangelization of these cities? Not rabbles, well, riots and ruins, because
there you go.
It's quite an adventure, and it's quite even a comedy at certain points, but it always involves these elements, it seems.
I think this is so important because that's why I love the saints so much, and I know the saints obviously are very deep in this book, and I think we forget sometimes that this is not the church's first rodeo, so to speak, and it's really important for us to look back. I don't think we do it enough.
Oh, I agree 100%. When we look back at what happened, we see that the early Christians converted their world, and we know that for a fact. Because the world they lived in became Christian. But they did it at an amazing rate. It was the church grew at a steady rate of 40% per decade. 40% per decade for 250 years. And all this took place at a time when the practice of the faith was illegal. All right, you could be killed for being Christian. If you even owned a page from a Christian book and you were caught, you could be executed the next day in a very terrible way, publicly, humiliatingly, with a lot of torture. So the Christians back then were doing something remarkable, you know, and I believe that we have that grace today, that we can do something remarkable for God. We can convert our cities. So it helps us to look back at what they did then and try to figure out what can be imitated.
Yeah, I think we know this in our hearts, but it's really, you know, in terms of putting into practice is another thing. But the question that comes to mind now is, if they did this when they risked their, literally, off with their heads, right?
Right.
And they didn't have the extensive means of evangelization in terms of media, communication, social media, I mean, just a vast, you know, amount of tools at our fingertips, what the heck is our problem? I mean, seriously.
Well, we have to look at how they lived, and it was always a different story. Every single city is a different story. There are these common elements, you know, as I said, rabbles, riots, and ruins. These things keep popping up in the stories. But every city was different because every city has a different character. Every city has a different personality. You're never going to confuse Des Moines, Iowa with Manhattan. You're never going to confuse Bismarck, North Dakota with Los Angeles, right? These cities all have distinctive characters, and these are all cities I love, all right? The cities I've visited many times and whose people I love. But every city has a different character and a different personality and will have a different conversion story. And that's really what I tried to show in the book. I'd show these 12 different cities. I tried to be as diverse as possible because that world, we think of it as uniform. Everybody was wearing togas. Everybody looked like a statue with a hand in the air, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we think of it as monochromatic, and it wasn't. It was very diverse. It was a very polyglot and colorful world. So I tried to capture those personalities in all those different places.
Well, what's so fascinating about this, though, is they didn't have, the fact that all these cities are very different, as you mentioned, they couldn't go on Wikipedia, and they couldn't even grab the old, Encyclopedia Britannica. That's really saying how old we are, if you remember that. But no, seriously, how did they research? How did they know? I mean, they sent people ahead of them, because you have to know your audience when you're going into a particular situation.
Well, often you had people who had jobs that took them from place to place. They were either merchants, right, or they were dealers in goods, you know, wholesale dealers in goods, or they were military personnel. Christianity spread a lot through military personnel at that time because they were constantly moving from place to place. They were always in port cities and places where deviants gathered, right? And Christians were considered deviants at that time, and they could gather together in cities. So the faith spread, I think, that way. But the common thread you find is that the faith spread through friendship. There were no programs back then, right? As you point out, there were no media back then.
Mm-hmm.
The media just were not invented. There was no electricity. There was no printing press. There was no anything. And you weren't allowed to stand in a crowded forum and start shouting the name of Jesus Christ because that would get you killed. You wouldn't be very effective. You wouldn't have a long life as an evangelist.
Right.
But you could have friends. You could have friendships. You could strike up a friendship with the family next door. You could strike up a friendship with the guy in the next booth in the marketplace. And it went from there. You know, I think that's the way the faith spread so rapidly. Again, 40% per decade growth.
That number is incredible.
It is incredible. You know, and we're talking now about managed decline. 40% per decade growth would be an almost unmanageable growth. It was incredible. So I think we do have a lot to learn from the way they established friendships. There are a couple of texts from the ancient world that really show this vividly. One of them is the Octavius by Minucius Felix. It's a text you never heard of because nobody ever reads it, right? Because it wasn't written by a cleric. He doesn't appear in the history books. But he was a judge in Rome who happened to be a Christian. And he wrote the story of a vacation he took with two other lawyers. I mean, it's a wonderful story of friendship and the way friendship led to conversion. And I think this was the common story of Christian growth in those centuries.
It's just incredible. Talking with Mike Aquilina about his new book, of course. He is already a best-selling author of many books on a wide range of Catholic topics. He's also the executive VP at the St. Paul Center for Biblical Theology, serving as a contributing editor of Angelus News and general editor of the Reclaiming Catholic History series, hosts the Way of Fathers podcast, and also, you know him well, from his many EWTN TV series that he has hosted over the years. And what you said earlier about being in the marketplace and someone at the next booth being able to get to know his friend, his neighbor there, I really think, and this has just happened so many times, that the way we are going to spread the faith today, because we do really do live, especially in this country, I think, and also in Europe, in a post-Christian society, is going to be much like it was in the early years, especially with the Acts of the Apostles, where you read about so many things going on a personal level.
Yeah, and I'm not talking, you know, you say that to people sometimes, and they say, I don't want to be a Bible thumper. And I'm not talking about being a Bible thumper. I'm talking about making a friend.
Yes.
That's all.
Bingo. Yes.
Yeah. And eventually, because Jesus Christ is at the center of your life, they're going to see Jesus Christ there. You will end up talking about Jesus, mm-hmm. but only after you've already earned
have that friendship and earned that trust. More with Mike Aquilina. Check out the book. We'll put a link to it on the archive section. It's published by our friends at Ignatius, Rabbles, Riots, and Ruins, 12 Ancient Cities and How They Were Evangelized. We'll look at some of those cities. Can't get through all 12 of them, but we'll highlight a few when we come back. Thanks for listening.
Do we, the people in the pews, have the responsibility to be witnesses to the gospel in the way we act and speak? Yes, asserts the Catholic Catechism. The Catechism defines witness as an act of justice that establishes truth or makes it known. As a witness, we manifest the new person we have put on in baptism, and we reveal the power of the Holy Spirit which was strengthened in us through reception of confirmation. Martyrdom, says the Catechism, is the supreme witness to the truth given us through faith. St. Ignatius of Antioch boldly proclaimed, "Let me become food of the beast through whom it will be given to reach God." The Catechism hails martyrs as archives of truth written in letters of blood. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Dr. Ray Guarendi.
What is criticism exactly? If you pay close attention, do you notice what most criticism is? Oh, it's not because you're doing something wrong or hurtful, something that needs corrected. Most criticism is, you're not doing it the way I would do it. Or you're not doing it the way I want you to do it. That's what most criticism is. And you have to get good at sorting that out. Otherwise, you're going to get real upset when anyone says anything about what you are doing. Now, of course, you could turn this on yourself. Do you do that? Is most of your criticism a message to someone else that says, you're not doing it the way I would do it? Well, save your criticism for things that are really wrong.
Sometimes I think we really minimize, diminish, and don't believe that having friendships can be the start, as, who was it, Humphrey Bogart said in Casablanca, the start of a wonderful friendship. I think I got that line maybe somewhat right. But that's where it starts. That's what you see in the Acts of the Apostles. And as Mike said, we don't have to go around being Bible thumpers. But if you love Jesus and if you have the joy of the Lord, that's attractive to people, right, Mike?
That's what you see in story after story after story from the ancient world. And you know, these numbers, pretty soon they start to add up. And again, we have to emphasize that Christians were evangelizing in a world that was completely hostile to their message, completely hostile. Persecution was everywhere. It was not only from the Jews and from the Romans, but it was from the Persians as well. It was everywhere you went. And it was universal, and often it came from above, but also it came from below. There were riots, there were lynchings. We have ample evidence of all of this, and even the pagans, the ancient pagan historians, acknowledge it.
All right, so I have this list of cities, and some of them I think we would expect to hear about, for example, Jerusalem, Antioch, Rome. And I want to look at, though, a few cities that people may be surprised by. Okay, so I'm going to go down to number 11 because I've been there and it's gorgeous. I think of the mosaics in Ravenna. So what happened there?
Well, Ravenna was one of the capitals of the Roman Empire. You know, once the Romans realized that Rome is pretty vulnerable, and then it was actually penetrated. You know, the barbarians sacked Rome, and it was a shock to the world. So they started to move the capital around in the late 4th century. And what happened was they moved it up to Milan first to be closer to the front. But then as you have a kind of decadence setting in among the aristocrats, they wanted to protect the emperor. They no longer wanted the emperor at the front. They didn't want the emperor having a say in the battle. So they moved the imperial capital to Ravenna, this out of the way place. Mm. And it was the last capital of the Western Empire. And it's filled with gorgeous churches, as you know,
right,
since you've been there.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing about Ravenna is that it really wasn't destroyed the way many other cities were destroyed. It wasn't sacked. It wasn't invaded. People weren't interested in doing much with Ravenna because it was out of the way. It
right.
was surrounded by swamps. They, mm-hmm. You know, why would you want to go there? And so the churches were preserved to a remarkable degree. You can walk into these gorgeous churches in Ravenna and see the inside the way the fathers of the church saw the inside of those churches.
Right.
You can see the artwork as it was when it was finished, and you could look at some of the pictures, the images that were done of living figures like St. Peter Chrysologus,
mm-hmm.
and Galla Placidia, the empress.
St. Lawrence.
You can look at them
St. Lawrence,
and see how they were done
yeah.
in real time.
Mm-hmm. They have that St. Lawrence on the grill. They have that there, too, in Ravenna. Haven't been to Ravenna in a while, but it is, if you think about it, it is very much out of the way because it's over on the northeast. It's under Venice, but it is in that very kind of, still to this day, kind of swampy area of
yeah.
Italy.
Now, yeah. I have never been there. I'm supposed to go there this fall, and it comprises the entirety of my bucket list.
All right, so before Ravenna, in Chapter 10, you talk about Milano. So if you're in Ravenna, go west, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
Milan, of course, a big modern city now in northern Italy. I still love Milan. I think Milan is amazing. But, of course, we think of Milan, and we think of Augustine, and we think of Ambrose. So what do you highlight in your chapter on Milan?
Well, you know, if that's all you had to go on, that would be plenty to go on.
Right.
The encounter of Augustine with Ambrose, but also, you know, I discuss the political circumstances, the military circumstances, the geopolitical circumstances that led to that moment, right, and led to something interesting. Now, the conversion of Augustine does come up, but I think more important to understand with that city is how Ambrose set a standard for what it meant to be a bishop. And I think it's a standard that we still observe today. You know, we look to Ambrose as kind of a model of a bishop because he was able to face down not just one emperor, but two emperors, you know, and an empress. Face them down and say, no, you're doing the wrong thing, and risk his life, really, by doing that. But these were Christian emperors, and he insisted that they should be behaving in a Christian way, that they should be setting a good example for the people they ruled. And I think that's one of the great stories there from Milan.
How did you go about, because there's probably even more than a dozen places that you could have chosen in
yes.
addition to this list, how did you go about narrowing it down to 12?
Well, I tried to include those that were most important in the historical narrative, like the great patriarchal sees of Alexandria, mm-hmm. Antioch, Jerusalem,
Ephesus,
and Rome.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so I tried to get those great churches in there and talk about the early history because they all had a distinctive character. Each one of them was different from all the others. But then after that, I really tried to build in a kind of diversity. You know, everybody's heard of Corinth because St. Paul wrote to Corinth and
right.
Pope Clement wrote to Corinth. Corinth, but I didn't want to do Corinth because it's a story that would be much like some of the other Greek cities. So I tried to go off the grid a little bit and talk about some cities that were very important in the ancient world, but that we don't know so much about today,
right.
Like Lugdunum, which is now Lyon in France. Most people have never heard of Lugdunum, but I wanted to make sure that one got in there. Ekmatsine is another one. Most people will not be able to pronounce it. You know, they can't pronounce it now, and they probably never heard of it. But it is the main city in the story of the conversion of Armenia. And the story of the Armenians is something that we should know because they were the first to risk becoming a Christian nation in a pagan world. And they're still being persecuted today. So they have spent the entirety of Christian history, you know, living with this certain degree of risk. I think they deserve credit for that. So again, I tried to go off the standard map a little bit and show some cities that were important in the ancient world, but are outliers, unfortunately, in our history.
Yeah, it is amazing, isn't it? And there is so much to draw from in terms of the history of the church and the different conquests and the saints and the challenges. And we should not get discouraged. It can be very overwhelming because we have so much bad news out there. But as I said earlier, this is not the church's first rodeo. And there are so many, you know, this great cloud of witnesses that went before us. And what I love about this book is that you're including many of the saints that were involved with the changes in these cities.
Yes. You know, because they're vivid personalities,
right.
and their stories shouldn't be lost just because they lived in places that are now of lesser importance geopolitically.
Right.
So we should know about the saints out there in Ekmatsine, and especially those in Lugdunum, because they're some of the important figures in the history of the church.
A favorite city that you researched this time around? Did one pop out to you for some different efforts?
Well, Ravenna. Ravenna just entices me because again, the churches there are intact. They're they offer you a real vision of what it was like during that time because the churches have not been harmed over time. That would be one. The other one would be Ekmatsine in Armenia because it's such an exotic, strange, foreign world. The artwork is so different and the culture is so different. But also because Armenia, when it became Christian, decided to preserve the great works that were already being lost in Christian antiquity.
Wow, this is fascinating. Michael, thank you for being with us, but also for this great book. I think it's a great book to bring on pilgrimage, especially if you're going overseas. And let me know what you think of Ravenna when you get there. It's amazing. Rabbles, Riots, and Ruins, 12 Ancient Cities and How They Were Evangelized by our friend Mike Aquilina, published by Ignatius. We'll be right back.
"60 Seconds with Father Mitch Pacwa."
Buddhism itself has a lot of different forms. There's no one type of Buddhism. When you get to Buddha himself, he was a complete agnostic and supposed to have been a very wealthy prince who had everything but found that this was all hollow and empty, especially in the face of death. What he came up with as a basic principle is that the source of all suffering in life is having desires. So you need to free yourself of all desires, and then you won't suffer in this life anymore. This would be very different from Christianity, where we don't want to give up our desire for God. First, we do believe that there is one God. Second, we do believe that it's three persons in one God. And thirdly, that the goal of life is not emptiness, but is union with God and through Jesus Christ. That's the way of salvation.
The people you know and trust are on EWTN.
Christ is the Answer with Father John Ricardo.
John 6, verses 48 to 58. Jesus says, "I am the bread of life. Your fathers ate the manna in the wilderness and they died. This is the bread," meaning me. "This is the bread which comes down from heaven that a man may eat of it and never die. I am the living bread which came down from heaven. If anyone eats of this bread, he will live forever. And the bread which I shall give for the life of the world is my flesh." At which the Jews disputed among themselves, saying, "How can this man give us his flesh to eat?" They're scandalized by this. How is it that we're not? How is it that we just hear this and go, "Oh yeah, I know that passage"? They're just outraged and at least perplexed. Sane people, inspired teachers, wise men, prophets don't say things like this.
terms of activities at the Vatican, we know the Holy Father is taking his vacation in Vatican City. But never a dull moment. An interesting story that Joan and I have been discussing back and forth about some discussions that will be taking place at the Synod. So, Joni, first of all, let's just get an update on the Pope. Pretty quiet right now, correct? Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah. Every so often we read that, you know, he's sending a message to this or that meeting, et cetera. But generally, well, of course, Sunday he was in Trieste. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of an unusual stay. I've never been to Trieste.
Me neither. That's on my bucket list, though.
We'll have to go together. Every mm-hmm. Italian tells me it is such a beautiful city. But the thing is, the Pope was there like from 8 in the morning until noon. Mm-hmm. So I didn't read too much about the weather. I mean, like here today, it's 101. I don't know, you know, what it was there.
Well, I was watching the coverage on our network on EW10. It looked very, very warm. People all had the hats on and the fans, and it looked really warm.
Yeah, there. Probably. Yeah. And so, you know, but it was kind of a lightning visit. It just 4 hours, but the main, anytime he's in another city, of course, he's going to say Mass. But also the main thing was the talk that he gave on the crisis of democracy. So mm-hmm. that was a busy day. I don't think there's another trip until the, September when he goes to, I'll have to check the schedule. Then he's going to Indonesia and will be gone for 12 days and so forth. So there's always things to do here because even though many members of the Roman Curia go on vacation, it's, you know, there are offices that are sometimes at half staff because it's just a thing to go on vacation here either July or August, mm-hmm. you know. And, I mean, there's probably a few people in the Curia that like to ski and might, you know, take time off in January or February. But the hot summer months are the places, are the times to either leave Italy, go someplace else, or go to the beach, or go to your home in the mountains where it'll often be cooler. So things are generally, you know, quieter. I mean, you wouldn't know that by going to St. Peter's Square, because I did an episode for At Home with Jim and Joy on Monday, and then another kind of a pre-tape yesterday, and it was head-spinning hot just to be in the square.
Really?
And just the thousands and thousands of tourists. But the funny thing is, wherever there's shade is where you find the biggest number of people. Mm-hmm. Sitting under the colonnades on both sides, walking yep. on the shady side of a street. And the funny thing is, Teresa, it is, let's say you're standing at a bus stop. If there's a tree, everybody is going to be gathered under the shadow of the tree. Yeah. But the funniest thing I saw last week, one day when I was having lunch at Home Baked and looked across the street at the bus stop, the sign that the bus stop is on, you know, this tall yellow pole, and then at the mm-hmm. top are written all the different buses that will stop there. The pole created a shadow. It couldn't have been 8 inches across, but people were standing in the shadow
wow.
of that pole. I mean, that's how hot. I'll have to take some pictures someday of things like that, because it's like, you know, how hot was it? People are standing in an 8-inch shadow of a pole. So, although, you know, shadow can make the, believe me, can make a difference. So,
how long is the line these days at outside St. Peter's? How long is it? I'm sure it's wrapping around the square.
You know,
someday,
they're huge. And someday, I think what I'm going to do is, as I'm crossing the square to film, you know, At Home for Jim and Joy, I think that what I'm going to do is get someone at what, you know, looks to be almost the end of the line mm-hmm. and tell them I'm a journalist, I'm doing a story on, you know, how long it takes to get into the Vatican Basilica. And I said, if it's okay with you, you know, here's my number.
Right.
Give me your phone number, but you call me when you actually get through security to go in. And that'd be fun, you know, kind of connect with somebody going into the basilica and find out how long it did take, because you're in the sun. You
right.
can't avoid the sun standing in the line to get in the basilica. And then, but it's just, today was supposed to be the hottest day of this week. I certainly hope at 101 that we, you know, go down to at least 99 tomorrow.
My goodness.
So, but, yeah. But, I mean, you know, I've been joking with taxi drivers. That, you know, I get in the car and it's air conditioning. And oh, my goodness, what a relief. You know, it's so hot. And then we get into this discussion about how every summer, July and August, we complain about the heat. And I said to the guy, in about 4 months, we're going to be complaining about the cold, you know.
Yep.
So, anyway, this life, all of its cycles, pleasant or not, there's going to be complaints as well as, you know, enjoyment. So, but life goes on here from the point of view of, you know, not every office does close down or stop its, you know, any events or press conferences. And there was the presentation of the Synod document, the last part of this, you know, four-year-long synod on synodality will take place in Rome in the month of October with all the participants of last year and then a few new ones coming to, again, talk about synodality. And fortunately, the document that came out this time, maybe it was the heat that discouraged people from producing a longer one, but the document came out and that will be used as the working document for those who are coming to Rome in October. And it's very interesting because the document did, I think, surprise a lot of people. It came out yesterday, but I think it surprised a lot of people because there were very hot-button issues mentioned last year that were not at the top of or even the bottom of the agenda for this year. So we don't have paragraphs dedicated to the LGBT movement, to women priests, to married priests, to women deacons, to married priests, etc. So these were at the end of last October's synod. All the controversies came out, and you had, I don't know if it was 50-50 or 60-40, but you had division. Those who want to see women become deacons and those who say absolutely no way there cannot be women ordained, you know, in the church. So, what I found interesting, as I approached the reading of it, I did a cursory reading of, like, the certain sections, but as I approached reading it, I thought to myself, the one thing I still don't understand after all the documents, after last year's synod, what does synodality mean?
Mm-hmm.
And Teresa, I'm guessing you've spoken to priests and other people involved in dioceses and
right.
so forth, you know, since last fall. But no, if I talked to 20 priests and bishops in a period of 6 months, every single one of them has a separate description of synodality. And I know that Phil Lawler in Catholic Culture said, he said the synod, analyzing the Instrumentum Laboris, he said mm-hmm. it does not provide a clear answer to the question that countless Catholics have been asking, what exactly does synodality mean? I mean, Teresa, I'd love to sit down with, you know, like Cardinal Grech or Cardinal Hollerich or the Holy Father and say, I don't know if my parish is a synodal parish.
Mm-hmm.
What does it mean for
right.
us to become a synodal parish, you know, or a synodal bishops' conference? So that's the whole focus of the synod on synodality, and yet it seems to be the biggest mystery. So, but interestingly enough, there were a couple of news articles and appearances on Twitter, well, on X, of people who quoted Cardinal Hollerich as saying something about women being ordained, and apparently
yeah,
Well,
this is a story that you're talking about ordained as deacons because, or possibly, I don't know if I didn't see anything on the priesthood, but this is a story that's very confusing to me. Speaking of confusion, we were going back and forth on this, and I have a vested interest, obviously, because Dominic has been a deacon for 12 years, and this whole idea of misunderstanding the holy orders just drives me nuts. But now we have, according to CNA, Catholic News Agency, Synod organizers revealing yesterday the Holy Father has asked the Vatican's doctrinal office to study women's participation and leadership in the church, including the possibility of women deacons, with the view of publishing a document on the subject, which is the lead paragraph. And then we know, as you said, it's off the table. That discussion is off the table at the Synod in October. You mentioned that, and this article affirms that, confirms that. But then also that 60 Minutes interview, the Pope said twice when he was asked, no women deacons or priests. So why are they discussing this? I mean, they have discussed it. It's not like this is something new that they haven't discussed before.
Well, you know, Teresa, this is where you and I wish we could help all of our readers and followers better, by taking something that is confusing and clearing it up. But we can't. I mean, we are hearing and reading the same things that they are hearing. We
right.
are reading news reports. We are reading interviews. We are reading, you know, good Catholic sites, et cetera. And it doesn't become any clearer. So we would love to tell people that, I mean, all we can say is what past popes have said on the ordination of women as priests. It's a no-go, never. And then ordination as women, as deacons, women as deacons, you know, is apparently something that the Holy Father, actually a couple of years ago, this wouldn't be new, did ask a commission in the Vatican to study. But does that mean deacon in the original sense in the Bible? Does it mean deacon as one of the three ordained orders? I think our listeners know that it's deacon, priest, and bishop are the ordained orders. A Monsignor is not ordained. That is an honorific title. A cardinal is not ordained a cardinal. That's an honorific title. So it's deacon, priest, and bishop. And being ordained is a huge important step. It's not just anything in the Catholic Church. So we'll probably have to go on. Somebody else is going to ask somebody at the Doctrine of the Faith, or they're going to ask Cardinal Grech, or maybe I'll send him a little Twitter thing and say, can you clear this up, you know?
So, yeah, because if you've already, if the Pope has already said no, and he's said no repeatedly,
right.
very strongly, by the way, in the interview with 60 Minutes most recently, as the Catholic News Agency article points out, and if he already commissioned a team to look at this and to look at it from a scriptural basis, and Deacon Dominic Serrato with the Deacon Magazine and our Sunday Visitor has studied this extensively. He's been on this program. I'm going to have him back on this, as a matter of fact. Okay, so, and at the end of the day, the Pope said no. He kept saying, no, this is, women cannot be priests or deacons. They can be in other ministries. But when you've got this, and I don't have to tell you this because you're the expert, when you've got this being discussed all the way, basically, Joni, at the top, when you're talking about the dicastery for the doctrine of the faith, you have to raise the question, well, if this is off the table at the Synod and the Pope says no, what is going on inside the halls of the Vatican where this is still coming up?
It kind of makes you want to say, does no mean no? I mean, or you know, is somebody leaving the door open for a no to become a maybe and then, you know, go on the route? So it is very disconcerting to see this kind of confusion, but as you and I have said on other shows and even exchanged, you know, emails before a show, this is not the first time in the church that there has been confusion on a matter which you and I and the rest of the world thought was a settled issue. So I guess we have to wait until a clarification comes along someplace, or, you know, until the October Synod. But I do want to tell, you know, our listeners that one of the best writers around and one of the best persons to analyze things like this document from the Vatican is Phil Lawler. And he writes on CatholicCulture.org. So if you want to know what this document said without reading all 60-some pages, then he has a great piece on CatholicCulture.org. What is said in the document, what it doesn't say, and et cetera. I thought something that was very piercing was he said, he mentioned some words that are conspicuously absent in the, I guess it's only a 30-page document. There's not a single mention of marriage. Surely a crucial document for the church to address today. When words such as sin, sacrifice, salvation, and redemption are also missing, the reader should realize this document omits a hefty portion of the message preached by Christian evangelists throughout the ages. So, you know,
gotta go, Joni. We're going to get cut off. We will pick this up next week. Joan Lewis, Jones Rome at WordPress.com. We'll be right back.
Another great podcast on EWTN Podcast Central is The Catholic Man Show. Adam and David come together for a weekly discussion about faith, virtue, friendship, fatherhood, and other tools and gears needed to pursue holiness. You can hear The Catholic Man Show and other faith-filled podcasts from our friends and affiliates around the world, all in one place, all free, at EWTN Podcast Central. Visit EWTN.com/radio and click on Podcast Central today.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
Ave Maria in the Afternoon, premiering July 15th with Dr. Marcus Peter. An engaging take on the church, culture, and current events.
Hi, I'm Marcus Peter. Tune in weekdays from 5 to 6 p.m. Eastern as we examine the world around us, past and present, through the lens of faith from the heart of the church. So join me in conversation with our guests and call in with your questions.
Tune in starting Monday, July 15th as we navigate the culture on this EWTN radio station.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Wow, this show went by quickly. Enjoyed it. I hope you did as well. Coming up tomorrow, you don't want to miss our regular segment with Father Mitch Pacwa, Cultural Connections. He joins us every Thursday. And don't forget to check out the archives to make sure you can get a copy of Mike Aquilina's latest book, Rabbles, Riots, and Ruins. Talk to you, God willing, a domani, tomorrow. Ciao, ciao.
You've been listening to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo. Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Our producer is Andrew Kruczek. For copies of this program or for more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Thanks for listening and join us next time for another edition of Catholic Connection.